Hello, everybody. This is Mike Orshan, and today we have Roberto Salinas Leon, extremely famous economist and author in Mexico and around the world. And Roberto, it's a pleasure to have you here. And could you give us a little bit more of your background?
Today I represent the Mexico Business Forum in Mexico, which is an associate of the Economist Intelligence Unit, part of the Economist Group.
Early on, Bush and Fox discussed economic development and other issues. How come, after all these years, they really never got far, never went anywhere?
NAFTA is the North American Free Trade Agreement. So it's an agreement about liberalizing trade. It was actually much more than that for Mexico in the sense that it also included liberalization of certain sectors of the economy for foreign direct investment. An unnoticed feature of this agreement is that it was able to lock in Mexico's jurisdiction to a trilateral or a regional jurisdiction, thereby making it very, very difficult to go backward on the jurisdiction, and thereby sending a very positive signal that Mexico would behave in accordance with a regional framework rather than with a national framework that could be changed, if not at will, certainly in a capricious manner. The Mexican Constitution of 1917, for instance, has been amended over 500 times. Compare that to the amendments that the U.S. Constitution has suffered over 200 years. And that gives you an idea of the need for stability in your rules of the game, in the framework. So this was an aspect that was never really commented on. It was a sophisticated point, but a very important point as far as giving credibility to the investment regime of Mexico. If you analyze NAFTA from the perspective of imports and exports, which after all are sales and purchases undertaken with your partners, the agreement has been a success. Exports and imports, in other words, the total economic activity of Mexico vis-a-vis the United States and Canada over the past decade and more has increased by 160%. So instead of, let us say, exporting $40 billion a year in goods, we're now exporting close to $250 billion. In my opinion, one of the greatest fallacies today when we discuss NAFTA is the negative effect it had on the agricultural sector. Well, it had a negative effect insofar as weeding out the highly non-productive ventures that Mexico was engaged in before it opened up its economy. But overall, agricultural exports to the U.S. and to Canada have increased and have increased substantially.
So are you saying that the agricultural sector is succeeding because they have a higher degree of efficiency today?
When you bring down tariffs and non-tariff barriers, what are you doing? You're reducing a cost of operation. In a global economy, the price is fixed by the international marketplace. So you have to work from bottom up. How can I increase my margin? Means how can I reduce costs? So whether you're left wing or right wing or center or up or down, it doesn't matter. If you're in the business of selling goods and services, your focus is going to be on reducing costs.
How does Mexico compete in a global economy?
Whether it be environmental protection or labor standard protection or cultural integrity protection or just simply tariffs, or it can be monopoly privileges. In Mexico, we still have a great many monopolistic or quasi-monopolistic ventures. The telephony sector or the cement sector, for instance, the petroleum sector is protected legally from competition. And that means in electricity, for instance, we have an electricity monopoly. We can outsource electricity services through a back door, but all of this makes electricity costs much more expensive than they would be under a normal environment where we would have different distributors competing to offer the best possible alternatives. So naturally, internally, we always see businesses lobbying for why they need protection from this or that group or from this or that force in order to compete. However, in the international marketplace, you don't have that protection. You must compete on the basis of efficiency. You must compete on the basis of being competitive. One of the great transformations that has taken place in Mexico, partially as a result of NAFTA, but of much more as well, the great transformations, is that the old D word, devaluation, let us say, has been substituted by a new word, competitiveness, the C word. And there's an obsession with how do I become competitive? How do you become competitive means how can I reduce cost because my price is fixed by the international marketplace? Well, you reduce cost by internal efficiency, but you can also reduce cost by the help you get from the entire investment regime. If you have an onerous tax code, for instance, or a very complex tax code, or if you must spend a great deal of your time complying with rules and regulations and all kinds of obstacles, those are opportunity costs and transaction costs that are going to hurt your margin and are going to hurt your competitiveness.
Well, do these exist in Mexico? Because I'm not really familiar with the tax codes and the obstacles.
Well, the tax code is enormously complex. We have differentiated regimes. We have exemptions. We have deductions. I do a great deal of work with small companies in Mexico. You must hire an army of consultants and of tax lawyers and of accountants simply in order to comply. Even if you derived a great pleasure from complying with the Mexican tax code.
How will Mexico
adjust the tax code to be more business friendly? Is it possible?
Well, right now this is the big debate that we're having. Yes, of course it's possible. One of the great damages done by the tax codes is the amount of privileges, exemptions, and deductions that businesses get. The businesses lobby for these deductions, obviously. It would be much more simple to eliminate all deductions, unify the tax code with a simple flat rate tax, let us say 15% or 20% or something of the sort.
Let's look at the United States, Mexico, and Canada. How do these countries integrate their labor markets together so it makes sense and everybody can grow while creating public acceptance?
Well, I think that's the question of the new millennium. First of all, we have to acknowledge certain facts. And the facts are that there is demand for cheaper labor north of the border. There is demand for these labor inputs. This is one of the reasons that those labor inputs are driven to those markets. So that combined with the fact that you have a very large fiscal time bomb with Social Security in the United States means that eventually you have to integrate a new tax base with these illegal immigrants. You have future obligations, right? When the baby boomers retire, right, that's going to create an enormous fiscal problem for the United States. You have future obligations. So either for the future, either you reduce the benefits for Social Security beneficiaries, or you increase the retirement age, or you increase the tax base. And one way of increasing the tax base is by allowing new immigrants to be able to integrate into the labor markets, satisfy that demand that exists already in exchange for a tax contribution.
I haven't heard that anywhere. Why is that not a...
If you read between the lines of what Alan Greenspan, very elusive and very mysterious language, Alan Greenspan, what he was telling you was that. Eventually, you need to integrate a labor market simply because economic forces...
Is Mexico integrating labor markets today?
The North and the South are deeply divided because the North has become much more integrated into the region than the South. So we have a polarization issue here. A lot of the labor inputs that Mexico's North gets, it's importing from the South.
What good is happening now, and how can we encourage the good to grow?
One absolutely fundamental contribution that has occurred is the advent of stability, of price stability. The cycle of devaluation, inflation, and devaluation, which occurred practically every 6 years, every last year of the president of the so-called sexennial, we have 6 year terms here. There was a 1976 devaluation, 1982 devaluation, November of 87 for all practical purposes, 1998, another devaluation. And then 94, after all the expectation and all the promises and everything, again, a massive devaluation. What this did to Mexican real salaries, it completely wiped them out. So right now we still live in poverty, extreme poverty, half of our population, but at least salaries are not eroding anymore. Inflation is in line with the U.S. Interest rates have dropped from a benchmark of 32% 10 years ago to 7% today. Still too high. Still has to come lower. But hey, now you have a mortgage market.